Check our schedule online at WPLN.org for a complete listing of all of our program channels and weekend and weekday programs. Nashville weather today, 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms, and partly sunny, the high in the mid-90s. 81 right now in Nashville at 9 o'clock.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, where once again today we shall put to the test your ability to judge the actual from the fictional.
A springe of bologna is six bolognas or more.
Right.
That's almost like a hackle of salami.
An exaltation of bologna is a full pound.
Yeah, right.
You know, people often ask us if we are given time in advance to prepare these definitions. I think we've given our answers.
I think that's
listening public
been taken care of right there. Will be thoroughly disappointed if at least once during the proceedings our answers fail to elicit the proper response.
Oh. Oh.
Whoa.
Oh. Oh.
I thought that's why you listened. I don't know. So come back and play after this.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. An important international loan installment is on its way to Greece after that nation agreed to swallow some bitter fiscal medicine. Terry Schultz reports from Brussels that several billion dollars in lending was endorsed this weekend by EU finance officials.
$17 billion will soon be on its way to Athens once the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, also signs off this coming week. The money is the fifth installment from the rescue package created for Greece last year. The funds had been blocked until the Greek parliament passed tough new legislation implementing further budget austerity. Eurozone finance ministers held an evening conference call to formally unfreeze the payment. Now EU partners turn their attention to keeping Greece afloat in the longer term. They're cobbling together a second major bailout, this one involving private sector financing, in addition to that from the EU and international lenders. Some French and German banks have already agreed to extend the amount of time Greece will have to repay existing loans. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
A deadlock at the state level has Minnesota's government shut down. Thousands of state workers are furloughed without pay, and NPR's Sonari Glinton tells us it's put a crimp on holiday plans for lots of Minnesotans.
State parks and offices are shut. Thousands of state employees are out on furlough. Democratic Governor Mark Dayton wants to raise taxes on the state's highest earners to try and close a $5 billion budget deficit. Republicans say that's a non-starter. Minnesota resident Cindy Dina says she blames both sides.
I am disappointed. I really was hoping they would have reached an agreement and one that met more in the middle.
Lawmakers in Minnesota aren't expected to return to the bargaining table until after the holiday. Sonari Glinton, NPR News, St. Paul.
Mexico continues to deal with the fallout from Tropical Storm Arlene. NPR's Jason Beaubien reports that the storm caused major flooding around Mexico City and left at least three people dead.
The remnants of Arlene continued to dump rain throughout central Mexico. President Felipe Calderon says a record amount of precipitation fell on Mexico City, overwhelming the drainage system for the urban basin. Tens of thousands of homes around the capital remain flooded. The government opened a shelter for residents of an impoverished neighborhood that was inundated with sewage. When Arlene made landfall, it also flooded low-lying areas of the Gulf Coast states of Veracruz and Tamaulipas. Runoff from the storm continues to swell rivers throughout the middle of the country, and heavy rains are forecast for the rest of the weekend. Jason Beaubien, NPR News, Mexico City.
The last draftee of the Vietnam War era is about to retire from the military. Command Sergeant Major Jeff Mellinger got his draft notice in 1972 and stayed in the service for 39 years. At the age of 58, he says he loves being a soldier. From Washington, you're listening to NPR News. Fireworks may be the quintessential way to celebrate the 4th, but people in many places in the parched Southwest will have to leave it to the professionals. NPR's Ted Robbins says that dry, hot conditions have forced towns and cities to restrict or ban private fireworks this year.
No backyard sparklers or firecrackers, and certainly no Roman candles in about half the cities in New Mexico, in Texas cities like Dallas, and in most cities in Arizona. That's despite the fact that the Arizona legislature last year legalized the sale of non-aerial fireworks like cones and spinners. But the law also allows cities and towns to restrict their use, which is what many did, including Tucson, because of extreme fire danger and the possibility of high winds. Unincorporated areas have also enacted emergency private fireworks bans, but public, professionally run displays will go on. Ted Robbins, NPR News, Tucson.
At the box office, the movie Transformers: Dark of the Moon has raked in $97.5 million in the U.S. since it premiered Tuesday.
I can't promise anyone a ride home, but if you're with me, the world needs you now.
If I'm on ride home, sir.
Paramount says it could top holiday weekend records held by Spider-Man 2 and the Twilight Saga Eclipse. 69-year-old Senator Max Baucus of Montana tied the knot for a third time this weekend as new bride, Justice Department lawyer Melody Hain. Among the guests, Vice President Biden, who flew in on Air Force 2 for the wedding of the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Says You in Memphis, Tennessee is made possible by the Buckman Performing Arts Center and the good folks at WKNO-FM.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you from the stage of the Buckman Performing Arts Center at the St. Mary's Episcopal School in Memphis, Tennessee. Welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He's a blues man's bluesman, hip to the appeal of Beale, Tony Khan. She's been working out a sightseeing tour of Memphis, a regular pyramid scheme, Garland Waller. And he wants to trade his Fitzsimmons trading card for a Mather card. Guess he'll have to go to the cotton exchange. Mr. Barry Nolan. Think it's easy finding guys with a first name Cotton? It isn't. Who's the captain over there?
Captain Tony.
Tony will be the captain. To my left, team two. She'd rather have barbecue at the rendezvous than a rendezvous at the barbecue. Carolyn Faye Fox. She thinks that Sun Records are, you know, like hottest, brightest, and closest to the earth. Lenore Shannon. And he thinks the Peabody Ducks just need a point guard and they could win it all this year. Mr. Arnie Reisman. And who leads this time?
I will be the captain.
Carolyn will lead. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a round of Memphis essentials. Please help us share the Memphis experience with the rest of the country by expounding upon the following essential facts about the home of the blues. Carolyn?
Yes.
Volney, V-O-L-N-E-Y, a lion, lived at the Memphis Zoo until his death in 1944. He was a memorable Memphis contributor to American culture. How?
The lion who roared at the beginning of the movies.
Is exactly right. Someone's done their homework. And the movie company, of course, was...
MGM.
MGM. He was the MGM lion.
Metro-Goldwyn-Memphis.
I thought it was more game mammals.
He did not work out a deal for residuals. He was one of the most miserable lions you have ever seen. Three times he did it.
All right, let's get this one out of the way, Tony. Why is it called Graceland?
Well, actually, I do know the answer to that.
Oh.
I don't know whether young Mr. Presley saw this mansion as a child and pined for the opportunity to live there or not, but this was a mansion that eventually became his home. It was built in 1938, I believe, by a lovely couple named Grace and, well, let's call him Schmendrick. I really don't. I do not remember his first name, but he was named after her and the king. Loved the name so much he decided to keep it.
You know something? He's done his homework. 10 points. Very good. Anybody fill in the details there?
Well, I believe the couple who owned Graceland before had a grandmother whose name was Grace, and she lived there, and Elvis liked the name and decided to keep it. Is that...
Well, it was named after Grace Toof. Is that right? T-O-O-F?
But it was the mother-in-law of the original owner.
Oh, I did not know that.
And it's really something when you can name your house after your mother-in-law.
Yeah. It was actually built in 1940, or I guess finished in 1940, a grand colonial mansion. Do you know why it looks the way it does?
I don't know what its choices were, but
yeah, right.
It decided to look like a mansion, a small
mansion. Well, I'll have to have the audience confirm this, but did she see Gone with the Wind the year before?
Is that of course.
Was it modeled on Tara?
Of course. Yes, there are two lions also facing as you enter.
I guess, and that's the
Did
thing.
Did Scarlett O'Hara have a jungle room?
All right. Now let's see how much they really did their homework. I'm gonna hit you with
what
this
homework?
One,
go ahead.
Why can it truly be said that Memphis has a spotless reputation?
You're asking me.
I sure am.
Spotless reputation.
Was it something to do with dry cleaning?
Nothing whatsoever to do with dry cleaning.
Spotless.
But I did notice
does
this.
Does it have to do with water?
No, it does not.
There's no litter.
That's.
Well.
That's part of it.
Sanitation workers have the largest union in the world.
Well, I don't know if they do or they don't.
Okay.
That I don't know.
Are we getting warmer?
Yes, you are. You're starting to.
On litter, were we warmer?
We're getting warmer with litter.
Litter. Oh, we're warmer.
So there is a law.
Were they the first city to enact a litter law?
No, that's well, they may have been, but that's not what I have written here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're a long way there. We're going to give you 7 points for that. Anyone up there know?
I think it was a dog control program.
Does anyone in the audience know?
Go for it.
That's exactly right. From about 27 people in the audience, what? Memphis is the only city in the nation to win the Cleanest City Award 5 times.
No kidding.
Oh, wow.
And
good for you.
Absolutely.
Can't say that about Boston.
No, they don't. And it was readily apparent to us on the drive over. It was quite nicely done. Garland, why might Danica Patrick, among others, choose not to live in Memphis? This is a real research question here.
Yeah, I thought we were just supposed to show up and shine.
Danica Patrick doesn't like to live here, wouldn't like to live
well,
here.
Well, I don't think so. I think this would put her off a little bit. Ooh, well, I think Miss Shannon is gesturing in a positive
I'm probably
manner.
Completely
no,
wrong.
No, 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 not yet. Just hold
not
off here.
It has to do with women driving?
It does.
Danica Patrick, and because in Memphis, women are not allowed to drive without their husband.
He's exactly
really?
Right.
No. Hey, Harry,
it's not my law, it's your law.
That seems like a very self-defeating law.
Can you believe this? It is illegal for a woman to drive by herself. A man must walk or run in front of the vehicle waving a red flag in order to warn approaching pedestrians and motorists.
I think that sounds like a pretty brave man.
They do the same in Pamplona, I think.
The self-defeating law, what would be the dumbest place to stand? if you thought she was not a good driver.
I mean, did any of you see this, you know, see this occur? Were there any guys out on the street waving red flags when you were... I don't know.
Didn't see any.
All right, try this one. This is a tough one, Lenore.
Thank you.
Memphis sits atop one of the world's largest artesian aquifers. Not only does it provide water for the citizenry, it is actually credited with saving Memphis for all time. Can you imagine why that might be?
Oh, water saving Memphis.
Yes.
Well, there is a river.
There are two of them.
Could you read the question again?
Sure. Memphis sits atop one of the world's largest artesian aquifers. Not only does it provide water for the citizenry, it is actually credited with saving Memphis for all time. Can you imagine why?
It put out a fire.
It did not put out a
Earthquake?
Fire. No. But you're...
Some natural disaster was averted.
It was averted?
I don't know if it could be called natural, but it's
an
certainly...
An unnatural disaster.
You mean they had a molasses flood here as well?
No.
It's
barbecue flood. Barbecue sauce everywhere.
It's more natural than that.
Natural.
Yeah. Don't say it out loud. Do people in the audience know that to which I am referring? Yeah, you do. Okay.
Do.
So just don't say it out loud.
Can you give me a year?
And it wasn't caused by weather.
It was not caused by weather. This was in the 1870s.
Was the water somehow poisoned? Now, how could it have been poisoned?
Well, you're starting to get... There was a reason why they needed fresh water.
Okay.
So something stopped the people from getting water out of the Mississippi.
Something stopped them in their tracks.
A law.
A very large animal. A dinosaur came out of nowhere.
Actually, a very, very, very small creature.
I've got an insect.
A
bee.
It was infested with
parasites.
Termites.
Right,
now we're into yellow fever.
Piranhas.
We are exactly into yellow fever.
Mosquitoes.
We are exactly into yellow fever.
Sorry, folks, that was torture.
No, it was. You're not done yet, and it's been a real toothache so far.
Okay.
I'll tell you that.
One mosquito named Manny.
Yes. Anyone else up there know anything about it?
Memphis had such a terrible yellow fever epidemic that 75% of the population left the city. It so depleted the population of Memphis that it lost its cityhood for a period of 15 years and was just a tax collection area.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
Mr. Barry Nolan.
Somebody did their own.
Yeah. Was it actually 15 years? I didn't know it was that long a period of time.
I just read a brief history of the mosquito.
Really?
It was in there.
Yeah, okay. In the 1870s, the city was plagued by a yellow fever epidemic, which killed 5,000 and caused another 25,000 to flee. So devastated was the area that in 1879, Tennessee actually repealed the city's charter, and it was the new sewage system and the discovery of a clean source of water from the artesian aquifer that is credited with ending the epidemic and saving Memphis. All right, Barry, since you did so well on that, last little bit of Memphis information here. On September 12, 1942, Memphis resident Margaret Polk went to a dance at the Peabody with an Air Force pilot. That date was destined to give her a place in American history. Just what exactly happened that night?
1942. That's right at the beginning of WW2, right?
Yeah. Memphis resident Margaret Polk went to a dance at the Peabody with an Air Force pilot.
A plane after her?
He certainly did.
Oh. And it was the...
And that was
the famous two-winged fighter, the Polker.
Now, what was the name? What was the name of the ship that dropped the A-bomb over
the
Hiroshima?
Enola Gay.
No, it wasn't that. The Enola Gay.
No, I know that wasn't the one.
Right. Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
But it looked like the Margaret.
So he named a plane after Margaret that went on a famous mission.
Well,
right?
Yeah, among other. Yes, it did.
Because it flew a long distance.
No,
it wasn't the plane that shot down Tojo.
Was it?
Oh, no.
No.
I can't believe they got this far into it and didn't get into it.
So this was a plane.
And I'm drawing a blank.
That was the first plane to ever do a thing.
I can't believe they got this far. I'm going to give them, how many points do I give them? Oh, good. I got 9 over here and 2 over here. So what do I...
He's saying 1. It's harsh. Right? We give up.
Well, they got that it was about a plane. I'm going to give you 5 points for that because it's right in the middle. No.
Whoa.
I'm giving them 5 points. Anybody else over there? No.
Nope.
Audience, tell them.
The Memphis Belle.
The Memphis Belle.
She
captured the heart of Captain Robert K. Morgan, who had just test flown in his new plane into town. So moved was he by the evening that he named the plane the Memphis Belle.
You know how painful it is to be in a room of 400 people and be the only person that doesn't know the answer?
Oh, there's about 6 of us, I'd say.
The Memphis Belle. I'm so sorry, but you got 5 points for that. So, you know, good job, you guys. Good job on Memphis lore. Really.
Yeah.
Very good.
Good job, audience.
I invite the audience to come up to Boston. We got a couple of beauty questions for you.
Yeah.
Number 1, you all pronounce Peabody wrong.
Yeah, right.
Are we the only people in the country that pronounce it Peabody?
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Just so I know. Let's go on to round 2, which is played with a little musical help from Jeremy Schrader's Hot Memphis 5. Thank you. Yeah, thanks a lot, you guys. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other 2 have blank cards. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Tony's team. 10 points up for grabs to Tony if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word Springar. 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 Gentlemen?
Of my jelly roll. I ain't gonna give you none, not even to save your soul. Yes, my mama said today, when she went away, if I'll be a good boy, she's gonna bring me a toy, 'cause I'm mama's pride and joy.
When is Says You coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at SaysYou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou.
Says You returns after this from home.
The U.S. Constitution covers a lot, but it says nothing about health care or deficits or armed drones over Libya.
There's a tendency to think that the Constitution has in it whatever you'd like to be in it, and when you look more closely, you may discover that's not the case.
I'm Andrea Seabrook. The Politics of the Constitution, plus the Opinion Page. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
Hi there, I'm Gian Gomeshi. From child stardom to a wildly popular TV variety show to successes on stage and screen, Donnie and Marie Osmond have, you might say, done it all in their 40-year show business career. And Donnie and Marie join me live in Studio Q, that is coming up on Q from PRI, Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 10 o'clock.
You
can find a complete program schedule for all of our programs on all of our channels at WPLN.org. You are listening to Says You here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. It's 24 minutes after 9, 85 degrees in Nashville.
Just a hanging around. You know I like you, and I hate to put you down. Well, my jelly roll is so sweet. You know they say it can't be beat. I know you want it, but you can't have it, 'cause I ain't gonna give you none. Yes, I know you want it, but you can't have it, 'cause I ain't gonna give you none. No, no.
That is Jeremy Schrader's Hot Memphis Five. Jeremy Schrader on vocals and trumpet, Chip Henderson on banjo, Tom Link on clarinet, Sean Murphy on tuba, and Gerald Stevens on the piano. Thank you very much, guys. We have had a few moments with the word Springar. We will go first to a smiling Carolyn Fay Fox.
Springar. I wanted it to be a personal-sized trampoline. But it's not. A springar is an arrangement of traffic cones.
Yes, I'm glad you thought that was worthy of applause. An arrangement of traffic cones. Pulling up to the traffic jam, and it's all caused because of that springar up ahead, right? All right, could be that. Arnie, what say you?
It's, maybe the band can play this later, but it's basically what they do to, I don't know whether it has something to do with the footwork itself or the season, but when you go outside of Oslo into the Norwegian country, you can hear this little springar dance. It's a dance in 3/4 time.
A dance? Just outside of Oslo.
Well, yeah, somewhere outside.
Okay, there, just outside of Oslo there. They're dancing in 3/4 time up there. Yeah. Hmm. Or, Lenore, what say you?
A springar is a southern spaniel. But actually...
Good, because you got hissed over here, and I was a little worried.
Springar is actually a southern expression combining the words spring and gear, spring gear, and it's really a southern way of saying your Easter clothes, your spring gear. It's an amalgamation of those two words.
Your Easter clothes.
Your Easter clothes.
That's your springar.
Very topical.
So it is either Easter garb, a Norwegian dance in 3/4 time, or an arrangement of traffic cones. I actually think those are good definitions. I'd take any one of them, but it's one and one only, and the choice, Tony, is yours.
Well, coming from Boston, the only arrangement of traffic cones that I've ever seen is after they hit the guy who's trying to put them down. And it can sometimes be a floral pattern. Sometimes it traces the shape of the person who had been distributing them. So I'm almost tempted to go for that for sentimental reasons. Arnie, and I realize that the radio listeners are deprived of this experience, but when Arnie was giving his definition, he had a powerful attack of blinkitis. His eyes were going like crazy. They were rotating clockwise and counterclockwise in his head. Which could mean that Arnie was actually dealing with the truth.
I think your CSI instincts are kicking in. I think that's good. I think.
And what about Easter clothes? Should we consider that as a possibility?
Garland, you're the expert on Easter clothes. What do you think about
those? I don't think there's a chance. I think I'd know about spring gear or springar.
Springar.
Yeah.
You think you should have stayed with the dog? The dog definition instead.
Well, that I would have. I think it sounds a little mechanical, and that's why the traffic cones.
Traffic cones?
Actually,
Yeah, I'm disposed. We're so far behind at this point, it hardly matters.
No. I think it's dance, but I'm willing to go with anything.
Go with it? Okay. With the overwhelming support of my team, we're gonna go for really no good reason for number one.
Then that was your definition, Carolyn. The arrangement of traffic cones. Is that, in fact, what Springar is?
No, I made it up.
Oh, sorry.
10 points for a successful bluff.
We're not here to win or for the money. You know?
Yeah. All right, audience, your chance. What do you think it is? Well, just about everybody in the audience thinks that that eye movement, Arnie, might have given it away. Is it, in fact, a Norwegian dance?
It's a valve that's installed. No. Yes, it is.
It is. That's what it is.
Yeah. I guess I have to control my eyes. Right?
Well,
those black and white pinwheels.
Yeah. As one of our presidents said, I'd rather be wrong than president. So.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Very gentlemanly of you.
Thank you.
Well, 10 points for a successful bluff. Good job, Carolyn. Let's go on to round three. Let's go to a spring theme. The first sign of spring in New England is snow falling on the St. Patrick's Day parade.
And, followed immediately by the 4th of July.
Yes, exactly. In honor of that recent occurrence up north, a round titled The Rights of Spring. Uh-huh. Please give me the right answer to the following questions about spring. Carolyn... Mm-hmm. Why should one never prune in the spring?
Because it's time to plumb in the spring.
Yes.
You should not prune in the spring because at that point the plants are growing so quickly and they need to use their energy to grow.
You know, that's what I always thought. That's not what the that's not the answer we got from the encyclopedia. So.
Well, you could prune off something inadvertently that the plant really needs.
No,
like it's dead.
Oops. Is it to do with cross fertilization or pollinization?
No, it's not that.
Do the bees not like it?
No, that's not it. I know I'm going to get a lot of mail on this, which is good. Does anyone else? I'm going to give you 7 points because I really do go with Carolyn's answer. But does anyone over here have any thoughts on that?
Because after the long winter,
yes,
all the growthy stuff is ready to just go zhoo, right out in there to the leaves, and if you cut it off,
yeah, that's the,
all
what
the growthy
saying.
Stuff.
Growthy stuff
goes
growthy
away.
Stuff. That's botany 101.
This is biology. You look this up, you'll find growthy stuff
growthy
right in the bottom.
Like truthiness. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyone in the audience want to weigh in on this?
How about you're going to need that shade in about 6 weeks?
Yeah.
That is very much to the point. Yes, I'm going to give you an extra point for that. That's 8 points because it's all about the light hitting the plant.
Uh-huh.
That's what it's all about. Let me read what we have here. And then please, radio audience, tell me why I'm completely full of it. But it said, because cuts made during the growing season will result in very dense growth on the top.
Mm. Uh-huh.
And that will produce shade and shade the lower foliage. So that will die. You want to allow more air and light to penetrate the plant, and pruning it early in the season does exactly the opposite.
Right.
So if I am wrong, please, radio audience, write in and tell me why, and we'll put it on the Daily Dispatch. Try this one, Tony. What common spring thread ties together the following? Star. Southern. Saucer. S-A-U-C-E-R, cucumber, and tulip. Star, southern, saucer, cucumber, and tulip.
Oh.
Do you have it, Miss Fox? Don't say it out loud.
Star, southern.
These are all varieties of something.
They certainly are.
Things that go well with barbecue sauce.
Chicken, tulip? A form of chicken.
Yeah, tulip.
Breeds of pig. Keep going, guys.
No, they are all varieties of something.
And they are things that come up early in the spring.
Absolutely.
Yep, they're out now.
And they're out now.
Mm-hmm.
Moths.
No, not moths.
Not forms of blossom, magnolia.
Well, there you go. Magnolia.
Magnolia.
They are blossoms of magnolia. Very good, Tony. They are all varieties of magnolia, traditionally the first tree to blossom, certainly in the Northeast, and probably along the East Coast. So very good. Arnie, why does Easter change dates year after year, and what determines when it occurs?
Take it, Lenore.
Well, it occurs after the first full moon of... It's the Sunday after the first full moon following the end of Lent.
No. Oh, brutal.
No. Is that it?
You're almost there.
Full moon. It's the moon determines. The full moon determines it, and it's.
It's the Sunday of the. It's the
Sunday.
The first.
It's the Sunday following the first full moon. Yes.
The equinox.
After the equinox. That's exactly right.
So it's the first full moon after the equinox.
Yeah.
It's the first full moon after the.
10 points. That's when it is. It's the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal equinox. It can occur, therefore, as early as, and there's a little bit of disagreement here, but we figured March 23rd is the earliest and as late as April 25th.
And the reason...
All right, Garland, sorry to hit you with this, but it had to happen to someone. For many years, every Groundhog's Day, members of this panel have been subjected to the Reisman conundrum.
Yeah.
Okay. Arnie's diatribe and dismissal of that tradition. Mm-hmm. What is the Reisman groundhog conundrum?
I don't have any idea. I just keep thinking of that movie, Groundhog's Day.
Yes,
just
which,
which I love.
Do you keep repeating something?
Well, no. If isn't it logically makes no sense whatsoever? If he sees himself, that means he shouldn't have been there. Hawks.
It has to do with the six more weeks.
You're confusing a porcupine or a groundhog with a porcupine.
Six more weeks.
Yes, it does.
Because if he sees his shadow, it will be six more weeks of winter.
That's true.
As opposed to if he doesn't see his shadow, there'll be a month and a half of winter.
He's closing in on it.
Closing in on it.
You know what? I'm going to give you. You got to the crux of the matter. I'm going to give you 6 points. And I'm going to go to Mr. Reisman. For the audience, Arnie, would you once and for all explain the Reisman conundrum?
Yes. It's a stupid holiday. It's a stupid it's a stupid concept. Because if you think of their choice as either 6 more weeks of winter or an early spring, 6 weeks from February 2nd is March 16th. That is an early spring. What's the point of this day?
I believe that was exactly Mr. Nolan's point.
He was dancing around
the record. The record.
Well,
show.
You're going to either have an early spring,
or you're going to have an early spring.
Are you going to have an early spring, or are you going to have 6 more weeks of winter, or about another month and a half of winter?
Yeah, what do you think, audience? How many points?
Yeah.
10 points.
Redemption.
10 points for deciphering the Reisman conundrum.
So what is the point of this?
I don't know, but I wanted to get that out into the public for once
Thank
and
you.
For all.
Yes, it's always
We've been listening to that for the last 13 years.
Yeah, every time it comes up, the Groundhog Day. What's the point of this?
All right.
And he says that every year, just like in the movie.
Yeah, right. That's the point.
All right, Lenore, you get the hard one, but try to figure this out. Not so long ago, George Warren Gill, Jr., passed away in his Florida home, and devotees of spring everywhere mourned his passing. What might be the connection between Floridian Bob Gill and spring?
Bob? Would you just say George Warren
That's
Gill?
His nickname, in quotes.
Oh, all
Bob.
Of a sudden we got a Bob.
Bob?
Okay.
Oh, he was the groundhog yeah. keeper.
No. Ooh, what a good guess.
Was he the master of ceremonies at some Easter parade?
He was not.
He was an author of a book.
No, nothing of that nature.
Was he the Easter Bunny?
Did he create the Easter Bunny?
Well, he created something, all right.
Listen, did he create chocolate,
chocolate
bunnies?
Eggs?
No, listen.
Chocolate
he created something quite different. Listen to the question again. Yeah. Not so long ago, George Warren Gill, Jr. passed away in his Florida home, and devotees of spring everywhere mourned his passing. What might be the connection between Floridian Bob Gill and spring?
Did he invent Peeps?
Oh, what a great guess. No. No.
Spring training?
Spring break.
Spring training.
He created the spring break.
He certainly did.
Very good, Arnie. Thank you.
Good Lord.
10 points.
He coined.
He is the acknowledged father of spring break. In the late 1950s, his Fort Lauderdale hotels needed a marketing push. So he hosted free junkets for travel agents and convention planners and helped lure the New York Yankees to Fort Lauderdale for spring training.
Oh, great.
But the coup was the filming of Where the Boys Are with his properties as background, which encouraged millions of collegians to head south.
Well, great question.
Barry, you get the hardest one of them all. I'm going to give you all kinds of help on this and lots of credit for everything. What is Rumspringa?
What?
Rumspringa.
Rumspringa.
And what you want to do is listen to the sound of that and try and figure out where that might come from. What is Rumspringa? It's also Rumspringa.
Spell this.
Rumspringa.
That was the name of a very unsuccessful, highly alcoholic former Secretary of Defense.
Fine, 10 points. Works for me. Let's see if you can get this. Now that you got the cheap 10 points, let's see if you can get this.
Is this a beverage?
It is not. What does it sound like to you?
Germanic.
Yes, it does.
Austrian. It's something.
But it's native to this country.
Amish.
It's associated.
Oh, I think the other side might
this,
have
this. This isn't. Are we in Amish territory?
We are in Amish territory.
Is this the period of? Well, grace may be the wrong word for it, where young, potential, truly orthodox devotees of Amishistry, or Amishness, let's call it the Amish way, are allowed to basically experience the world that they might be renouncing by going off and having a springer.
Go down to Fort Lauderdale and see how Amish... Yeah.
You know,
see how Amish you really are, and then come back if you want.
You know what? Before they blow at 10 points, I'm glad I gave it a 10 points. That's exactly what it is. I am told it happens most in the spring.
Yeah.
It is from the Pennsylvania Deutsch term for running around. It refers to a period of adolescence for some members of the Amish movement that begins at the age of 16 and ends when the youth either chooses baptism into the church or instead leaves the community.
That could be about 58, 59.
Well, let's go on to round four, which is Tony's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff 10 points. Carolyn, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word springe. Springe, along with our spring theme. Springe.
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 Gentlemen?
Says You says thanks to all the folks from Vermont to San Francisco, Booth Bay, Maine to Cleveland, Boston to Los Angeles, everyone who came out last year to join the fun at a live performance of Says You. Next season's schedule of tapings will be posted shortly on our website at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. Just follow that Join the Fun link and we'll show you how to join the fun. We'll be right back.
I'm Tom.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Pulitzer Prize-winning biographer Ron Chernow says George Washington was not the waxwork saint of our school books. We'll look at the passionate George Washington. Plus, Beach Boys legend Brian Wilson sings and talks about his musical hero, George Gershwin. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Weekday mornings from 9 till 11.
On the next Fresh Air, growing up in East Texas with a father who drank too much and a mother who spoke in tongues. Country music singer and songwriter Rodney Crowell brings his guitar and performs songs that relate to his new memoir, Chinaberry Sidewalks. Join us.
I could shed my skin and in the blink of an eye.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
You're listening to Says You on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. You can stay connected to Nashville Public Radio through our weekly email newsletters and on Facebook and Twitter. Find out more at nashvillepublicradio.org. The time is 9:45. It's currently 86 degrees in Nashville.
That is Jeremy Schrader's Hot Memphis 5. Thanks, guys. Let's take a minute and thank our scorekeepers. That's Alec Gustafson on the right and Mr. Benjamin Scher on the left. Thanks, boys, for keeping the score. We have had a few moments with the word springe. We will go first to Tony Khan.
My mother used to broil bologna for lunch.
Yes.
True story.
It's true. I ate it.
And you knew that it was about ready when not only everybody in the kitchen ran hysterically out of the house, but also when you saw a springe of crust forming on the top of the slice of bologna. A springe is burned brush.
Burned brush. Is springe.
I guess so.
Something you'd see in the fall.
How does brush have anything to do with bologna?
Well, maybe the whole thing is bologna.
It was.
I don't know.
It was just a particularly vivid image in my mind.
Okay.
Burned brush.
Something you might see in the fall in New England. Springe all over the place. Burned brush. Could be that. Or garland, something else.
Well, when I was young, my brother was a couple of years younger than I was, and he was very mechanical. And he and my father, who were both architects and builders, would always talk, use words like torque, which I thought was just a kind of wonderful word. And there was a long time when I thought torque and plié kind of belong together. they just felt right. But eventually I learned that there were words that you could use when you went to a mechanic. And so as a woman, they didn't think, you know, they couldn't take you for being an idiot. So I would go and say, I think there's something wrong with the torque. And then I realized they thought I should probably be doing ballet. But anyway, I do know that the torque is very similar to the springe. And you see, it's a tight coil. And you do see it in a car, like on a battery kind of thing.
A tight coil is springe. Okay. Could be that. Not likely, but possible. Barry, springe.
It's actually a springe.
Okay.
It's a snare for catching small game, especially birds. Actually, it's in an odd coincidence, I saw a German documentary about this. It was all about this, and it just showed scene after scene after scene of these small, dumb animals being caught by this snare and just sitting there looking so pathetic. I believe the name of this documentary was the Jerry Springer Show. That was a long way for that one.
Yeah. I think that got the reception it deserved, don't you? It is either a snare for catching small game, a tight coil, or burned brush. It is one of those three, and the choice, Carolyn, is yours.
All right. Well, I think Tony's comes
baloney?
From...
Oh.
trapping baloney?
Trapping baloney.
Yeah, that frisky baloney.
You know.
I think the burnt brush came from singed. And
yeah,
I think that the
be.
Tight coil...
Came from spring.
Came from spring.
Therefore, Barry is right.
Therefore...
That's how you do the show.
Yeah. but Richard goes to Venery a lot with trapping.
Venery, does he?
Venery. Birds and, yeah. Well, you know, the...
I was thinking of SpringeBob Fun Pants.
Yeah, that's true.
Whatever floats your boat.
So, that's, so Carolyn, what you think is Barry?
I think it's Barry.
Go ahead.
We go
sure.
with that. We
we'll
along
go
with
Barry.
That.
So you think it's all Barry? You think it's the snare for catching game?
No,
no, I just think that, that was so dreadful that he had to start with something real.
Well, I think that somewhere in that whale is a tiny salmon.
Okay.
You know, just itching to get out.
All right. Barry, they think your definition was so awful that it probably was true. That
well,
springe is a snare for catching game. Is that in fact what it is?
Springe is a snare for catching small game. It's basically Barry.
10 points.
Way to
go, guys. For Carolyn's team. Nicely done, guys. Let's go on to round 5. Let's close tonight with another spring round. Pistol packing mamas. From the following ridiculous clues, puns, and references, please give me the type of flower I have in mind. An example, a foppish feline is, of course,
a dandelion.
A dandelion, exactly.
All right, we're back to Balmy. All right.
Carolyn, try this one.
All right.
Type of flower brought to mind by the clue. What Aleut couples do in June, perhaps.
What Aleut couples do in June.
That's yes.
Low.
Is ice part of it? Edelweiss?
No. Oh, what a great... No,
great
that's
answer.
Not it.
Do in June.
What
thaw.
Do they do in
they
June?
They thaw, they melt.
What's do in June?
Eskimo's nose.
What do they do in June that they don't do the rest of the year?
They mate.
Wed.
Don't say it. Anyone in the audience know? Okay, some people know.
Marigold?
Marigold. Oh.
Marigold is right, because, of course, the clue is...
Who knows?
They marry cold.
They marry cold.
Oh.
Whoa. Oh. Oh. Oh.
How about...
ER.
How about Juniper?
I thought that's why you listened. I don't know.
That has nothing to do with it.
Okay, well, Tony, type of flower...
Venus flytrap.
No. Rats, I missed the Venus flytrap. Try this one, Tony. Type of flower brought to mind. What thugs might do if we cross them.
What thugs?
Yep.
Beat them.
Kill them.
And it's a flower.
Oh, yeah. It's a spring flower.
Thugs, it's a spring flower.
Yep. What thugs might do if we cross them?
Mug?
Poppy.
No? This is harder than I thought.
Daffodil.
Don't say it out loud. Anyone in the audience know?
Killy.
Okay.
Lily. Crocus!
Oh!
There you go.
Very good, Barry. Excellent.
Really?
Excellent.
What thugs might do if you cross them? They might croak us. Yes, croak. That's probably
okay.
It. Try this one, Arnie. Oh, reprehensible bunch.
A reprehensible bunch.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
Daffodils?
No, how would that, does that work?
A reprehensible.
I think we're taking blind guesses at this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Reprehensible bunch.
bad Irish, bad.
Not so glad. Gladiola. No, it's.
I don't think they're going to get it.
Reprehensible bunch.
Anyone on the other side of any?
Well, we have two candidates. I mean, one of them is Nasturtiums, and the other one is
Nasturtium. That's very good. No, it's
or Violent.
Vile Lot. Yes, a vile lot.
Oh.
Oh my. Well, these all.
Big stretch.
Whoa.
Oh my God.
Wow.
It was right there in front of you.
Yeah, well, it'll be right there in front of me tomorrow, too.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get it if you ask it again.
Try this one, Garland.
Yeah, you know, Barry just said, good luck, sweetie.
Yeah.
See you down the drain, kid.
Yeah.
Try this one, churning chalice.
Buttercups?
Buttercup.
Oh. Buttercup is exactly right. Churning chalice is buttercup. All right, then we'll give you this one, Lenore. Flower that might be brought to mind by Drudge Patella.
Drudge Patella. Oh, peony.
Peony. Very good. Now you're getting it. Now you're starting to rock and roll.
Well, Carolyn jumped in on that.
And finally, try this one, Barry. Out of control fervor for a card game.
Out of control.
Spring flower brought to mind by out of control fervor for a card game.
Something British. Wild poker. Card game. Bridge, poker.
Solitaire.
Solitaire. Out of control. Wild hearts. Bridge.
Oops.
It has a card. Oh, somebody just got it up there in the audience.
Wild.
This is where they spend the next 5 minutes looking at these people thinking, they're so dumb. It's so obvious to me.
Daffodil.
What?
Daffodil.
I like it. Give it to him. Yeah.
I have to give it to him. I have to give it to him.
Wasn't what you thought it was, was it?
So there.
The Daffy deal. I have to give it to him. Yeah, that's 10 points. Very good, Tony. But does anyone out there know what I really had in mind? Wisteria, yes, Wisteria. Is what I had in mind, but you got 10 points for that anyway. That was a great finish, and it gave you a total of 85 points, but you fell 4 points short. A victory for Carolyn Fay, Fox's team. Congratulations, winners this week. That is a good game, you guys. Good game. That is all we have time for this week. Thank you so much to Cindy Yonker and Stephen Weeks here at the Buckman Performing Arts Center, and to Lawrence Goodwin and Justin Willingham from WKNO here in Memphis. Yes, sir. We also send a shout out to Dan Campbell, who's been our friend for years and supported this effort. Schur and Salkind are the writers. Antonio Oliart mans the meters, and Zach Moore is our associate producer and webmaster. From the web this week, we found this spring joke. 4 high school boys afflicted with spring fever skipped morning classes. After lunch, they told the teacher they had a flat tire. Much to their relief, she smiled and said, "Well, you missed a test today, so take seats apart from one another and take out a piece of paper." Still smiling, she waited for them to sit down. Then she said, "First question, which tire was flat?" Go out in the sunshine and have a good time, and we'll see you all next week.
Says You in Memphis, Tennessee is made possible by the Buckman Performing Arts Center and the good folks at WKNO-FM. You can hear Says You again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high-quality copies available.
Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
You've been listening to Says You on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our program channels, including our newest service, Classical 91.1, at WPLN.org.
The Nashville Symphony presents Tour de Force for Cello, July 8th and 9th at Skirmerhorn Symphony Center, part of the Summer Festival Series. Saint-Saëns' first cello concerto places incredible demands on the soloist, and German cellist Alban Gerhardt is completely up to the challenge. Also featured is Mendelssohn's Third Symphony, inspired by the composer's visit to an aging Scottish castle and captures the feel of a victorious march through rugged terrain. Tickets are available at 687-6400 or nashvillesymphony.org.
A 20% chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon, otherwise partly sunny and the high in the mid-90s. Right now it's 87 degrees in Nashville. The time is 10 o'clock. Studio 36.